that's
yeah.
I think we should talk a little bit about this, because I know we usually talk about Gian Gonzalez and everything, but I think this could be...
Oh, we'll talk about Gian Gonzalez.
Actually, I do have a Gian Gonzalez story that I need to tell you as well. It involves Paul London.
I'm ready.
Yeah, okay, right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Turn Chuckle. It's day something or other of this isolation, and I'm starting to go insane. But fear not, everybody. My guest today is long-time former... What would you be? Former co-host. Former
sidekick.
See, the thing is, like, you know, I started a good intro and then I fucked up quite quickly. I have Colin Delaney. He's wonderful. Let's everyone applaud Colin Delaney.
Do we get applause?
Everyone,
do you you pipe that in later?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone's applauding at home now. Like, I'll record some of the do you know when they're clapping the frontline workers, like the NHS staff and everything now? I'll exploit that and I'll put it, because we set off fireworks where we are, so I'll record that and then I'll put it on when I introduce you. But yeah, it's Colin. Hello.
Hello. How's it going over there and across the pond?
Yeah, it's fine. It could be far worse. I mean, it's with this isolation stuff. We've been talking about it before. We have rules imposed, I guess. But at this point, small businesses and some larger businesses are like, oh well, we'll just open and see what happens. And it's like, well, no. If you open, it's going to get worse again. And I don't like to just fall for everything that the government sort of tells me, sort of thing. But I know people who've gotten ill from this, so it's just, I think we should just be a bit cautious a little bit, but
sure.
Money wins out a lot of the time, I guess. So how is everything where you are?
It's okay, because I think if I recall correctly, you guys kind of got it before we really did over here, so you guys are a little bit ahead of all of this. So we're still in the stage where they think that things can open back up, and they're probably going to in the next couple weeks, but I think that's just going to make it worse, and then they're just going to shut us down worse.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm hearing on TV, and I try not to watch all of this coverage because so many people are saying so many different things, but they're saying that it could be like a cyclical thing where, you know, every winter we just stay in. And
At this point, I'm just riding the wave. I mean, what else can we do? I see people on online who are like, no, they can't keep us in our houses. Let's fight this. And there's other people who are like, please, everyone stay in their houses, because if you don't, then this is just going to go on longer. And I'm just like, I'm just going to do what they tell me for now and hope that we can get through this thing sometime soon.
Yeah, and I know that talking about this, because I know that when we have done shows in the past, we talk about things from 25 years ago, which kind of makes the show timeless. This is going to hate the show horribly if you listen to this next year. Like, either we'll all be dead, or so it won't matter anyway, or we'll just look back on this and go, you know, remember that COVID-19 stuff?
Yeah, so if you are listening to this in 3 years... kindly fast forward the first like couple minutes of this thing, but then we'll start talking about 25 years ago and you guys will be happy again.
This is true. Well, at the same time, you are deemed an essential worker because WWE is an essential business.
Yeah, that's not true. That's not that's not how this works. WWE is deemed essential, so that they can still run out of their facility, out of their, you know, performance center. But for independent wrestlers, you know, running shows without fans isn't really an option, because then where is any kind of revenue coming from to pay the wrestlers? So, yeah, independent wrestling is pretty much at the mercy of, you know, things starting back up and us being able to have events that have people at them.
How does it work in America then? So, because I'm self-employed, but I'm also a carer. So, okay, like there is funding available to me, and you know, but it's such a minefield. And to be honest, I don't find out if I'm eligible for some of it until like June. So, like, as an independent or a self-employed person, are you like entitled to anything? Like, is it just
so they made it? They opened up unemployment, so you can, if you are self-employed, like gig workers and such, which would be like, you know, musicians and independent wrestlers, artists, people who make their money off of, you know, by themselves. They made it so those types of people can apply for unemployment, but it is a bit trickier. Like, there's a lot, you know, a lot of that stuff isn't taxed and hard to prove, and like you would need like proof of a lot of this stuff. So it's not easy if you're in that situation. It's not impossible, but it's not easy.
Wouldn't you think that WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump would have a bit more empathy towards wrestlers?
Yeah, he does. That's why he let Vince McMahon run his own thing out of his own facility, even though, I mean, flying human beings away from their families, having them be in airports and in airplanes close to other people to arrive at a center where they touch each other a bunch, and they don't really have an option whether or not they do or don't do that. It doesn't seem the most essential.
From your point of view, like, and we will start talking. Don't worry, listeners. We will start talking about Giant Gonzalez and being silly quite soon. But like,
for sure.
What, in your opinion, do you think morale is like at the moment? Do you think no one can be happy about being made to do this?
So that, I don't think that's true. I think there's two sides to this. I think people with families and such like that probably aren't happy and probably don't want to do it. But there are people who are, you know, just single individuals. Maybe they don't really, you know, have grandparents or don't see their grandparents very often. So it really doesn't necessarily in their mind affect them. And they're just like, I want to work. Because you hear it with all athletes kind of right now. All sports leagues are trying to figure out how they would get back to like having games. And it's really kind of a mixed bag. A lot of people do want to go back to either playing baseball or basketball or wrestling or whatever, and they'll do it as soon as they're allowed. But there are people who hear these ideas on how we can get back to doing these things and say, no way, that puts me and my family in a bad place, and I'm not going to do it.
But we... I've tried to watch like Raw and SmackDown and WrestleMania and everything, and I admire everyone who is doing this, but it just, in my opinion, it just doesn't, it feels uncomfortable without a crowd. It's kind of like watching a comedy without a laughter track. Like, you know,
it's difficult. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I have you, do you watch Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
So have you watched either of the episodes that they do, they've been airing while in social distancing?
No, I haven't seen those. No, what are those?
The first one is real rough. It's a real tough watch because it's that the same thing where you remove the laugh behind it. You remove the, it's like watching, you know, random YouTube videos kind of that people do in their houses, but it's on TV.
So it's, wrestling without a crowd, though, if we looked at wrestling and if it was as legitimate as it could be, as like a real sport and everything, what is it when there's no crowd? It's just kind of like two people beating each other up for the entertainment of like some old billionaire. It's, you know, it's like paying for them to do it. Like it's
so, yes,
it's weird. It's kind of like you can pick like training, the training option on like a wrestling game, and you just wrestle prepared. You know.
Sorry, I just had to go grab something from the front door. what all that random noise is. But no, you're right. I think that the longer this goes, we are going to have to kind of change how the sport looks and how it is presented.
Yeah, it can't go on forever like this. I mean, I'm more accepting in my mind of these kind of movie style matches now, like the Boneyard match, and how undoubtedly they're going to film the Money in the Bank match and stuff like that. You know, that for, you know, works for the current situation. And like, don't get me wrong, again, I understand. I watched The Undertaker rise to heaven at the Royal Rumble '94 and all that kind of stuff. You know, there've always been sort of things that step outside the boundaries of logic and stuff. But now I think it's probably the best way to do it, to be entertaining, because and you'll know yourself, watching some of these matches when there's no crowd, you realize how exposed wrestling can be in terms of like the moves and in terms of the impact of the moves, or even when a ladder gets thrown in the ring and all that kind of stuff. It just feels kind of hollow in some way.
You're not wrong. And also I definitely think that this is going to make us as performers have to rethink how we do a lot of what we have done and what we know to do. Those cinematic matches, like the Boneyard match, that Boneyard match was awesome. It was awesome. But then you had, on the other half, you had Edge and Randy Orton go out there and try something that also may have been awesome, but it actually didn't work very well. So I think you're going to see a lot of this trial and error here and see what works and what doesn't. And I mean, it's probably going to change how we do a lot of what we do moving forward. Like you were saying earlier about it sounding hollow, I noticed that I was watching a random SmackDown, I think, Usos against the New Day. And usually the Usos get such great noise on all their strikes. And something about the empty building, I can't tell if it's how they are recording it or how they have the audio, but those strikes didn't even seem to have the same slap and oomph. Maybe it's because the commentary is too loud, or because they're not miking the ring up like they usually would, or there's something to it for sure, because even stuff like that is kind of lost its whatever in all this.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, they are, AEW seems to have it more, like, they've adapted for this better than WWE has, because they are still presenting it as if there is an audience there. I think that when the audience only now is whoever is watching TV, I think they should acknowledge the camera more and kind of connect with the audience more. Like, I find it hilarious when they have microphones for like an empty arena, or, you know, it's kind of cool that, like, I think Sheamus could hear the commentary one time, so he took, you know, he had a problem with what Michael Cole was saying, and, you know, that makes sense, because you are in an empty arena and, you know, you're gonna hear everything that's going on. But yeah, I don't know,
people are gonna adjust, and it's probably gonna steer more that direction where they're gonna be playing to cameras more. They're gonna be less, because right now, I mean, every other match somebody does that hokey thing where they try to get crowd reaction, but there's no crowd. Ha ha ha. It's like, okay, that's you can't do that every show. Somebody can't do that every show. It's just not reasonable.
No, you could pipe in the crowd noise from the Warzone video game.
Now we're talking.
Pin and player one, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Man, if they could do that, they could totally CGI crowd in. Man, they should CGI crowd.
Well, someone had the idea to green screen the entire arena, and you know, you could have it in space. Do you remember, like, I think it was like the Nitro video game where you could wrestle in a disco and all that kind of stuff? Like,
And there was another one, one of those early SmackDown games, you could wrestle like in WWF New York.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I mean, someone had the idea to have a green screen hooked up to several webcams like around the world, and then you could still have like genuine reactions to things, but that could
there's definitely ideas like that out there, and I mean, we're gonna get to them there eventually. It's gonna happen. I mean the fact that we haven't figured out a way to like pipe in crowd yet is a little crazy. I think they're just trying to roll with it, but let's roll with some crowd.
Yeah, no, definitely. So before we get completely silly, it would be because it's been a little while since we've talked, and since we last talked, I mean, you've had matches in WWE and on AEW. So how's that generally been? Like, sort of, I can imagine that, you know, these may be long stories or whatever, but how did you, were WWE in your hometown, and how did the AEW thing happen?
So WWE was what happened first, and it was almost 10 years to the day that I debuted with WWE back in 2008 that I did my first time back, where I wrestled the Bludgeon Brothers on SmackDown. And I had been in talks with them just about coming down and just kind of showing face, doing some extra work for them. And yeah, it was actually in Cincinnati and Cleveland. And they put me on and wrestled the Bludgeon Brothers, and it was a lot of fun getting in there with my old friend Brody Lee. So then from there, it seemed like they wanted to bring me back and do some 205 Live stuff. So they brought me back the following week. I wrestled Hideo Itami in his debut. And all leading up to it, it seemed like we were going to go forward and do something, and then kind of just fell by the wayside, I guess. I went back and did a couple more things. Wrestled Leo Rush. Did a quick spot on 205 Live another time. And then it was really just all the sizzle had gone out of the idea of having me on 205 Live, which is a bummer because I was excited. I like a lot of the guys there. They, you know, a lot of hardworking, awesome dudes they had on 205 Live.
Mm.
So that was a bummer. But AEW then has started up, and I know plenty of people over there. It's a lot of indie guys and a lot of, you know, random friends that I've made throughout my 17 years in wrestling. So they were going to be in Cleveland, and that's not far from me. So I asked if I could come down, and then came down, and they had me team with Sean Spears with Tully Blanchard against the Best Friends, who are both good friends of mine. And that was a whole lot of fun, too. I'm kind of bummed all this stuff went down because they were actually going to be in my hometown that week that everything got canceled.
But with what has happened, does that keep you optimistic for the future in terms of, you know, did that kind of come out of nowhere, the WWE and AEW stuff?
I mean, I keep in touch with people, and I'm always, you know, kind of keeping feelers out there, trying to keep my face seen and shown and all that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not optimistic about pretty much anything right now because, you know, like WWE just made a bunch of layoffs. It doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on over there? And AEW seems like they're just going to run that current, their, you know, the guys they've got for the immediate future, at least until we can figure out how to get past all this. So, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic that when things get back to normal, I can get back to getting my face on TV. But until things get back to normal, everything's up in the air.
Yeah, no, and with me as well, like sometimes it's one of those things you kind of just wake up in the morning, or I do, and I'm just like, oh, fuck, like it's just another day of this. But then it kind of makes me personally think, well, literally everyone else is going through this as well.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a case of being there for each other. And I've had some, you know, really good friends who've helped with certain things, you know, even if it's like getting groceries or whatever, you know. So it's just, you know, you have Pro Wrestling Tees store, and everyone should visit.
Yeah, Pro Wrestling Tees. Or if you have me on Instagram, I've got Twitter or Instagram, I've got a couple other designs that I've got here in stock that I will ship out to you if you are interested. I take, you know, all the usual payment options. But yeah, I mean, it's tough for all independent wrestlers. You should go to Pro Wrestling Tees and just find your favorite and support, because some people I know, that's really what they're living off of right now, and it's scary.
Yeah, and it's a very, you know, wrestlers from my experience of like knowing some are, you know, some of the proudest people in the world, and they don't, you know, they wouldn't want to necessarily talk about this kind of stuff, you know, in terms of like having to advertise themselves in this way because of everything that's going on. But it's just so, it affects everyone so much that, you know, we're all in the same situation. We all have to do what we have to do to get by at this point. So, you know, yeah, definitely visit Pro Wrestling Tees and support your favorite wrestler, and you'll be back.
Oh, I hate doing it. I hate. And I know it's like, I don't know. It just feels so, I don't know, to me. It's not my thing. I'm not that kind of guy, so.
No. I get it. So, was that your first time meeting Tully Blanchard?
So, pretty much, yes. I met him. He was backstage when Ric Flair did the retirement thing at Raw, and I was there for that. Back in 2008, and I went up and introduced myself, but that's the only time I've ever encountered him. And Tully Blanchard is my favorite wrestler of all time. So getting to do anything with Tully Blanchard was insane. And my buddy Chris, who works for AEW, he knows that Tully Blanchard's my favorite wrestler of all time. So when I got to the building that day, I didn't know what I was doing, and he was like super excited to tell me that I was working with Tully Blanchard.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, I've got to say, with you know, because I don't really talk about it too much, but you know, AEW has been so fun and such a welcome breath of fresh air. But also, there is enough nostalgia in there. Whether they do that on purpose or whether that's just me connecting it to, like, say Nitro or something like that, like the very best of Nitro. It's so appealing to me as like a wrestling fan.
No, I agree with you, and I think I actually think without the crowd, they've had to kind of change course a little bit, and it's almost for the better. I really enjoyed the TV shows they were putting out, but now that they're having more like kind of enhancement matches to enhance their own talent and kind of bring their own roster all up to a level, it feels more like a TV product that we are, I guess, more used to, as opposed to throwing out like crazy indie matches, like indie dream matches every week, which, you know, it was great for me, but some people, that's not how they consume wrestling. So I think they're actually doing a fantastic job in this current state of things the product they're putting out.
They have enough minds there who, you know, or, you know, someone like Cody, you know, you can't not take stuff from Dusty, and they know how to basically do studio wrestling at this point. It's kind of like when the NWA got brought back, everyone was kind of like, oh, this is different and new. And it's just like, no, they've kind of just taken an old concept, and so many people haven't seen it or aren't used to it that it's just kind of, you know, it's just unique and different compared to what else is out there at the moment. And I guess different is good. I mean, the thing about AEW, that one of the most appealing things to me about it is that it knows how to touch you emotionally. Like, Cody is so good at that. Like, I've probably shed a tear, like, you know, about 10 times during like a Cody promo when he starts crying about, as soon as he mentions Dusty, I'm away, you know. It's one of those kind of things. Or like on the first match on Dynamite, the very first match when Cody wrestled, you could just, when Schiavone got in the ring, you could just see they were both ready to just cry. And I was just like, oh, this is beautiful. Like,
yeah, having Tony Schiavone there is super cool. Having guys like Arn and Tully around, and now Jake Roberts.
Oh, Jake's been so good. Like,
yeah, in roles. And mixing that with the, like, the fresh talent that, you know, has been kicking ass all over the place for years, getting that big TNT platform is super cool. And you could tell that even being back there, being backstage in that locker room, you can kind of feel it, that everybody there, they generally want AEW to be awesome. And that's cool because WWE doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like they have this mentality where it's all for the product. Whereas AEW, it feels like a locker room full of guys who are all working towards a common goal, and that common goal is to make AEW great.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think AEW realizes how many wrestling fans are still out there who have been disillusioned over a long period of time, and they know to present something that's going to work for everyone. Not everything on the show appeals to me, but you know, I'm sure that the things that appeal to me on that show aren't going to appeal to other people as well. But it should be a mixed bag. That's what makes it fun. I guess
that's what makes that's what makes every wrestling show fun, or at least that's what's supposed to. That's how, I don't know, that's what used to attract me to wrestling cards a lot. I wanted to see some cruiserweights flying around. I wanted to see two big guys like slugging it out. I wanted to see a women's match. I wanted to see like a technical, like technically gifted, like submission type wrestler. I wanted to see a crazy hardcore brawl. I wanted to see those main event type matches, and having all of that on one card is what makes a wrestling card interesting to me.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I think it's one of those things where everyone loves, say, WrestleMania 17, for example. And if you ask a lot of people, they may not know why they like it. And in my opinion, a lot of the reason why people like it is because there is something for everyone on that show. There's nothing repeated. And, you know, it's one of those kind of almost perfect shows, in my opinion. And maybe when you like something, it's best to not know why you like it. Like, you know, and I know it wouldn't take us long to get onto WrestleMania 9, but it's like, you know, it's kind of hard to explain why you like something. Maybe you just like the overall look of it. Or, you know, AEW, even with their color scheme and stuff like that, it's just a very visually appealing show. Whereas, you know, SmackDown especially, it just looks so cold. And I'm not trying to just rag on WWE here, but it just blue everywhere, you know.
And their set is all just cookie cutter one set now, and there's nothing kind of cool about it. It's just kind of like, here's the set. Like, I don't know, it used to have some kind of whatever to it. And also, everyone's entering at floor level now. We don't got a ramp anymore. Like, the ramp is what made things cool. I was watching I think it was WrestleWar. Oh man, maybe it wasn't Wrestle War. It was like a show from WCW in like 89 or 90. And the Steiner brothers come to the ring from what seems like four levels up.
Oh, was it Starrcade 89 where they walked down the stairs?
Oh, maybe. The match was Steiners against New Wild Samoans was what I watched.
That sounds right. I mean, it was almost like a drum riser, like at a concert. Like
it was huge. it felt like it was something that should have been on American Gladiators. They were so high. It was awesome. And it gives this like, I don't know. Wrestling was always like, wrestling is up in that ring. That ring is higher than everybody to create the illusion that it's bigger and it's more grand. And it's, you know, so when you have guys entering at floor level, it kind of takes some of that away, I think. Right.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. It's what made me always like the Maple Leaf wrestling shows. They seem to be the only WWF shows that had an actual walkway. And, you know, if you notice, the Maple Leaf shows kind of looked different to all of the other WWF shows at the time, because they bought the ring and bought the entire production from Tunney. And they just continued with it. It was kind of weird. There was no WWF stamp on that show whatsoever. Like, even the turnbuckles and the colors of the ropes and everything. But along with that came the entrance ramp. Not even a ramp, the walkway. And it was, you know, we may have talked about this before, but there's just this one match where I think George the Animal Steel takes on Sika, the Wild Samoan. And for like 10 minutes, they're just pulling faces at each other on the ramp. And the crowd are going wild for it just because they can see everything, and it's just so over the top. And, you know, there's that platform for them to be able to do that. It's just, yeah, just weird.
Did they come down through the crowd? Was that one of those buildings?
No, it was kind of like, I guess it was Like a baseball stadium. So they have to like walk up from the dugout. So, because I guess it's a hockey arena because it's Maple Leaf Gardens. And then there's the big WCW style walkway sort of thing. Okay. Yeah, kind of like the thing. I mean, you've seen it when Bam Bam, is it Bam Bam and Taz? Go through the entrance. Oh no, they go through the ring, don't they? But who was it who went through the walkway in ECW?
Might be the same too, if we're being honest.
It might have been. But yes.
I remember WWE when I was there. They had we did a house show loop, and it was up in like the New England area, and there were these weird tent towns where these were like weird concert tents that we were wrestling in, and you would have to walk like there. You would enter down through the crowd.
Really?
That sounds with like security flanking you. It was kind of cool.
That's really cool. I was going to go somewhere with that. Oh yeah, the Giant Gonzalez. I feel like if anyone remotely remembers the shows that we used to do, I would like to think that people are like, well, where's your Giant Gonzalez reference? here it comes. Did I tell you about this? I interviewed Paul London on a stage in front of people.
Okay.
It was kind of one of those things, like El Ligero was in the audience, and I was just like, oh, I'm going to actually have to try and be entertaining here. But it was kind of, but the thing is though, once we started talking to each other, because we were promoting a film that he was in, he plays Elvis Presley, Avenging the Death of Bruce Lee.
Yes.
And we just, once we started talking to each other, we just forgot the audience was there. And I was just like, oh, they're not laughing at stuff, I'm hoping. And it turned out they were just actually interested. So, you know, it was at least interesting, if nothing else. But did Paul ever tell you the story about his idea where he was going to be on a losing streak, which he said he was on anyway, so it wasn't that much of a stretch. And then he was going to just sort of go insane one week. And then there were going to be like these VHS recordings of him walking along a beach, and he's just questioning life and doesn't know what he should do with his life and everything, whether he should quit wrestling and stuff. And then one week he kind of trips over a treasure chest in the beach, and he like opens the lid, and then the next week like the light shines out of the treasure chest and shines in his face and everything, and every, you know, the idea would be like, oh, what is this, you know? And then it turns out that it's, he brings out the Giant Gonzalez outfit. This was an idea that he wanted to pitch to WWE.
I'm into it.
And the next week, he comes out in the Giant Gonzalez costume and starts beating everyone, and he's kind of on this winning streak all of a sudden. But then you find out that Regal, who was the general manager at the time, had been paying people to sort of to take the fall for Paul London, just to like give him self-esteem, and then he finds out about it and then gets really angry and then sort of starts a feud with Regal at that point. Like, I would have been into that.
I'm into anything that involves somebody wearing a Giant Gonzalez suit, especially somebody of Paul's height, because he's not that tall, so it would be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, the legs would have went up to his armpits, I guess. You would have to pull them right up.
Well, I just think I think the Giant Gonzalez suit, but to Paul London's scale, is still funny. You know, even if they made like a smaller version that was like to scale for him, but still had all those weird muscles and hair, would have been hilarious.
Right. So I feel like the time has come for me to ask you. There is a podcast in the UK called Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts of all time. And
okay.
I told him in person that he is the reason why I started doing a podcast. Whether he wants to take credit or blame for that is entirely up to him. But he has this thing, he has these books called Emergency Questions. And it's usually if there's a lull in the conversation, and the questions are usually, and he's asked like world famous people this on stage, like, have you ever tried to suck your own dick? That's usually the question that he asks. Or, would you rather have a fist made of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun lotion? All that kind of stuff. And it's quite surprising where some of these answers go. Let's have a look. See, I can't take my time on this because this will just be dead air if it's just me flicking through a book.
So while you're flipping through the book, I started a podcast with my tag team partner, Cheech, where we talk about tag teams. And each week we watch, we pick a different tag team and we go watch a bunch of their matches. And then we come back together and talk about what made that tag team great. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a fun exercise to keep my brain in like wrestling mode, but also leads me to fun discoveries of certain things. And while doing the Steiner Brothers last week, I read somewhere, it might even be on the on Scott Steiner's Wikipedia, that when they came over from WCW in 93, the plan was originally to have Scott Steiner win the, like, come in as a surprise entrant into Royal Rumble 93 and win Royal Rumble 93 to go on to WrestleMania.
Yeah, like Pritchard mentioned that on his podcast, and I have a feeling that a lot of Wikipedias get changed based on what Bruce Pritchard says on his. Realistically, do you think that that would have been the case? Do you think?
I mean, that's bonkers. The thought of it is bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at Scott, and you would be like, yeah. But then when he starts talking, I mean, that would either be the thing that propels him into the stratosphere or be the thing that stops him from main eventing WrestleMania in general.
In watching Steiner Brothers, I realized that my favorite stuff of theirs is their WWF run. So it would have been a tragedy had we been robbed of that. Like, that means we don't get Steiner's Head Shrinkers, which is probably my favorite Steiner Brothers match of all time. And I'm not like, we talk about a lot how much we love WrestleMania 9. I would put that match up against almost any other tag match on any WrestleMania of all time.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, the Steiners are great. And the thing is, they since then have said that they didn't like that time up there, largely because of the travel. And I would hate to have been an enhancement talent against the Steiners in WWF during that year.
I would hate to be an enhancement talent against the Steiners at any point. There was a 1992 match I was watching from, I think it was Wrestle War 92 against Fujinami and I can't remember who the other dude's name was. Another Japanese dude. He was real young at the time. And the Steiners just beat this dude up, just straight beat him up.
The Steiners really could just kind of pick you up and put you where you needed to go. I mean, there's just the Royal Rumble 93 match against the Beverly Brothers. There's just this thing where Scott gets the hot tag, and I've never seen someone just manhandle someone so easily. And I don't think Bo Beverly had a say in this, because Scott just kind of picked him up and rushed him towards the corner and was like, right, just this is where you're going to be for this move now, whether you want it or not.
And the Beverly Brothers were not little dudes, neither. No. they may have looked like regular size because of who they were up against all the time, but I'm sure that one of them was probably, they're probably 6'3", 6'4", apiece, both 250, 260, maybe more. And the Steiner Brothers were just manhandling them, and they would just manhandle anybody. It was crazy.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think we talked about this, but the first 10 episodes of Superstars from 1993 are now on the network. WWE or whoever runs that network doesn't appreciate how much someone who loves 1993 watches 1993. they need to put more 1993 episodes of Superstars and All American and everything else up there. I got through 10 episodes in less time in real time than the episodes are there for.
Right.
Because you skip through the Raw bits because you've seen Raw a million times anyway. But it's a lot of fun, those episodes. So it's basically leading up to WrestleMania 9. And you do get the one of few TV matches from Lance Cassidy, which is worth the price of admission alone.
I'm waiting for them to put up Shotgun Saturday Night and then Velocity and all. I'm looking for those shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, especially the whole year of 97 Shotgun is amazing. But those first 5 weeks where they're in the New York venues, it's just unlike anything else. It's just such car crash television, like the Sunny sex tape with Elmo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the rumor was that Todd Pettengill played Elmo for that? So obviously that was the first question that I asked him, and he denied it. But Todd is also married, so I thought, right, okay.
Probably can't get that one in. I also just think, like, all those B shows, there's a surprising lack of Crash Holly on the network as is, and that's because he probably did most of his work on, like, Sunday Night Heat and Velocity. But man, did I love Crash Holly, and man, would I like more Crash Holly on that network.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, there's a weird random Crash match from 2002 against Scott Hall, and there's, like, a picture of that has shown up on a lot of merchandise. Like NWO or Scott Hall merchandise, and Crash just happens to be in the ring. And for whatever reason, they photoshopped out his... You know how he had Crash Holly written on his tights? On his shorts? They photoshopped that out. I don't know why.
They just wanted to be random blank human?
I guess so, but then you could choose any other match. Like, but they use this one with Crash Holly, like, all the time, which is just... insane. So as a sort of toy fan as well, have you seen the AEW figures?
Yes, I have.
Very, very impressive stuff.
They're making, because they already showed, like, the next set of figures that are coming out, and it's like, wow, they're really just pumping guys out here. That's super cool. Like, we don't have to wait, like, you know, you would figure they would just give you, like, the Bucks, Kenny, Cody, you know, they'd go off the rip with the first six or eight or whatever, and then they'd make you wait forever for anybody else on the roster, but they're not.
No, they're not. And there was a little because Jeremy Padawa, who ran Jax at the time during the Classic Superstars era, he's in charge of these new figures. So he's very much coming at it from a Jax viewpoint in terms of, you know, he's looking at getting the distribution really out there, because Mattel's distribution on a lot of their figures at the moment is just awful, especially in the UK. It's really, really bad. But he's also making the boxes look like the old Classic Superstars boxes, and he's doing the one of 500s. And have you seen the little bit of the bubbly set? It's in the shape of like a champagne bottle.
Yes, I have. It's excellent. They're a lot of the random things they're doing like that are just, it's a lot of fun. They keep talking about a video game, but I think that's probably a bit farther off than everybody would like it to be.
It's crazy. I mean, it's wonderful what you can do when you have like a billionaire funding you. Like, AEW isn't going anywhere. And what I like about having a billionaire who is prepared to spend money, Even if it's not making the money, it just means that you get outrageous stuff, and it's just fun to watch. Kind of like on Nitro when they went into the second hour, and there's a match going on, and they would just set off the pyro to mark.
Fireworks. Yeah. It was awesome.
It's such a waste of money, but like, I love watching rich people waste their money in just ridiculous ways to entertain people.
You would love Tony Khan.
Uh-huh.
He loves like early 90s wrestling. He loves like random WCW Saturday night matches and like all that kind of stuff. He was also a gigantic fan of WWE ECW.
So was it when, I'm guessing you got a chance to meet him when you were there?
Yeah, so when I met him, my friend introduced me to him, and he instantly was like, "Oh my god, it's so cool to meet you. Like, I love WWE CW. It's, you know, tonight we have three guys in this one match who are all on WWE CW, and I'm so excited." And I was like, man, I didn't even think about that. Like,
oh, that's wonderful. That is like, every time I'm kind of like how I would book WrestleMania, I would basically have the Roman Coliseum back and stuff. When they did Mania at the Performance Center, they should have just gotten everything out of their warehouse and just decorated the entire arena and, you know, all of that stuff, like the old neon entrance and stuff. Tony Khan, I think, would do that if he had those kind of resources, and he just seems like a wonderful, eccentric billionaire. Like,
yeah, he's a super nice guy. Yeah, everybody went out after the show and you know, had some White Claws together and chatted, and he was there talking about, like, you know, him and Jericho got into talking about like those WCW tapings for, like, whatever it was, Main Event or Saturday Night that they would do at, like, Disney back in the day.
Yeah. So the fact that you're a billionaire doesn't matter, really. It's just, it's someone from our generation who grew up watching what we watched. And it's kind of I guess it's hard to explain to, like, say, older fans or people, like, don't get me wrong, I love Jim Cornette. He worked in WWF in 95, and I don't think he understands why people like 1995. And I'm just like, well, nah, like, people just kind of, I think, should realize that we grew up during a time that older people didn't like anymore. You know what I mean? And I kind of feel myself being in that position now, being slightly older, and going, is this what the kids like now? You know, but at the same time, a lot of people who are wrestling now and who are promoting now watched wrestling during the 90s and are influenced by that. And I think it's really cool that that's kind of come around again. And you even see it with, like, sort of a lot of pop culture, that when DX and Austin and everything were cool, this is when a lot of these celebrities were growing up. So you see, like, major sports stars or actors or whatever wearing, like, re-released Steve Austin shirts and NWO shirts and stuff like that. And it's, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I can't disagree with you. Do you watch those Dark Side of the Ring things?
Yes. I just watched the Dave Schultz.
Right. I did as well. And I also watched the other day, I watched the Brawl for All one, which I'm sure you were all about.
Yeah.
But Jim Cornette is just, you watch him say things, and sometimes you're like, oh yeah, Jim Cornette, he knows what he's talking about. And then other times he says things and you go, oh, right, you're a crazy person.
I love Jim Cornette, but I can't agree with everything that he says, because I think it's kind of, I talk to Stacey regularly and stuff like that, so I'm certainly not trying to take sides or anything, but it's just, his stuff now is largely based on reacting to what is on TV now. And it's just like, I think that that's a shame, because I think he's trying to be constructive in some ways, but, in, you know, I can understand why it's going to turn off a lot of people as well, because it's the thing with a lot of these podcasts, like Jim Ross's and everything. And I know this is a wrestling podcast. I'm not at all trying to be hypocritical or whatever, but, and I hate to keep going back to WrestleMania 9, but I listened to Jim Ross review WrestleMania 9, and he fucking hates that show.
The first two matches are two of the best matches on any WrestleMania, and you can't tell me otherwise.
No, he does like them, but he's like, oh, they could have been better. And I'm just like, oh, come on, Jim, you're ruining my childhood here. But that is kind
of... Get out of here.
That is the thing now. It's kind of the, you know, reviewing old things now and largely, you know, mocking them. This kind of puts me off listening to these shows, because I'm just like, oh, you're like kind of ruining my childhood, especially when you were sat at ringside for the entire show and being really sort of, you know, infusing.
Yeah. But some of that, like, I don't know, some of it is stupid. And if you don't acknowledge that it was stupid, then you seem foolish yourself. But at the same time, like, I don't know, to not be able to look at things through, like, I don't know, like, to look at everything with just now vision seems a little silly to me. Like, you have to look at it with, see both sides of it, and, like, kind of examine it for what was going on then as also what is going on now, and there you can give, like, an honest opinion.
I think it's easy to be negative, though, and that's what kind of gets listened
to. Oh, of course.
On things like podcasts and stuff like that, and, you know, it's just... I'll be honest, I'm
so far the other side. I like when people get along. Like, it's fun when people, like, disagree a little bit on something and they have fun banter about it.
Yeah.
But I hate to hear people argue. I hate it. Apparently people love it, though, because it's everywhere. Like, so many podcasts or, like, sports talk shows or whatever, that's what they are, just people arguing with each other. And I hate it.
Yeah, Yeah, it just, it's one of those things as well that everything comes across in the same, like, sort of level, like decibel level. Like, there's no dynamics to the speech as well. It's just kind of like people trying to talk over each other and just like trying to force their point through and stuff like that. And it really, yeah, it kind of puts me off. And again, I know that I have a podcast and I know I'm on a podcast network and everything. And, you know, and debate is healthy and stuff like that. But I'm just kind of like, you know, you've seen some of my collection, you know, this stuff kind right. of means a lot to me because it's stuff that I grew up loving and it's stuff that has stuck with me for a long time. And you can always go back to it. It's kind of like BoJack Horseman watching Horsin' Around. Over and over again, like I will watch WrestleMania 9 and like until the end of time, and almost like I'm watching it for the first time, but I'm also lip syncing the commentary sort of thing. It's probably unhealthy at this point.
I mean, I watched Steiner's Head Shrinkers at least 3 times in the last month.
and for people who haven't seen that, it's got just some of the most insane stuff, like that hangman move where I think Samu accidentally pulls the rope down a little bit too much and then Scott Steiner goes headfirst onto the floor.
So the thing about that spot that always gets me is that if you're doing like a hot shot onto the top rope, you generally don't pull the rope down at all. So it seemed like potentially Samu thought that it was going to be a low bridge, which would be just Scott Steiner taking his own tumble over the top rope. Mm. And Fatu went with like the hangman. So it seems like they did both ideas, and Scott Steiner, like, I wish there was a camera on the backside. I wish I could see Scott Steiner land. It's terrifying how he just goes up in the air and then disappears from frame.
Yeah, it reminds me of because I'm a huge fan of Christian, and every time he was the first person I ever saw whenever they took the bump off the ladder, because the wrestlers would usually crotch themselves on the rope or whatever, he would go from the ladder to the outside of the ring and basically do an elbow drop on the floor, and there would
yeah
nothing in between. Like,
I would rather do that than do the crotching onto the ropes, which is very hard to land. They make that, like, Shawn Michaels used to make that bump look easy. It is hard.
And I'm guessing, like, it must hurt your balls. Like, it has to, surely.
Yeah, I mean, you got to try and catch to the best of your ability while you're also, like, tipping from this ladder, which isn't tipping, you know, no ladder is going to tip perfectly straight. Mm. So you have to try and, it's a terrible landing. I would rather take the floor. I would honestly rather take the floor, especially in WWE, where those floors are super cushy.
Oh, really? You would have thought that, you know, because the ring's notoriously hard, so you would have just thought the floor would be as well, right?
So, for me, the ring and the floor at WWE were about the same, because that ring is kind of jacked up in a way, so, like, 2 500-pounders can hit the mat and it won't break.
Yeah.
So when my 150-pound frame hit it, it was like it didn't move at all. It just hit flat.
Was there any difference in the ring between when you were last there in 2008 to now?
That's a great question. I don't exactly remember. I don't remember. I guess I just wasn't paying that good of attention.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. And again, going back to that Steiner's match, you know, it's one of your favorite spots of all time when Rick power slams Samu off Fatu's shoulders.
Yes, and I saw them try that spot in a couple other matches, and it never works like that. And in this match, it works perfectly. Yeah.
Where else did you see it?
Oh man, they tried it. They may have tried it in the New Wild Samoans match in WCW.
Okay.
So yeah. Fatu may have just been trying to recycle this thing again.
Yeah,
and this time it just worked.
It seems like the type of thing that must have had to have been Fatu or Samu's idea. Like, I don't think the Steiners would have suggested it for some reason. Right.
In the first try that I saw them do, Rick doesn't really hook like a power slam. He almost catches like a fallaway slam. So it's almost like he's doing like the Scott Steiner backflip fallaway slam thing that would always put him on his head.
Yeah.
Off the shoulders. So it just didn't come out as crisp and clean. But the one in the head shrinkers match, whoo, he catches him power slam style and he goes over kind of over the shoulder. It's awesome. That match is like the perfect mix of like car crash, big cool things, and like a genuine like story. Cause you know, you rarely got the Steiner brothers in peril back then. You had Scott in legitimate peril. It was awesome.
This is true. And the thing is, if they'd ended it on that power slam, that would have been enough. It's a shame that the Frankensteiner kind of didn't go quite as planned.
Agreed. Yeah, he takes who takes it? Fatu?
Samu. He kind of takes the flip a little too early.
Yeah, he takes a weird roll. Whereas back in that day, the Frankensteiner was like a head bump, like you were going straight down on your head. Mm. So the fact that Samu kind of caught it and took a roll, it kind of takes all the stank off it. So it was that's really my only complaint about that entire match, that Frankensteiner just kind of went. If they did like Steiner Bulldog or something after that Frank, if it was like Frankensteiner hoist them up, Steiner Bulldog, perfect match.
Mm. And the thing is, I love it after the match where Bobby Heenan's like, I want to see a replay. And Jim Ross is like, we're not going to see a replay. And it's obvious why we're not going to see a replay. but the thing about the Superstars matches, I'm sure that that top rope DDT is on some of those very early matches as well, because that was the move that Vince was like, no, you're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, and you would see them, because I think there's a clip of them doing it on like Money Inc. one time. They did it on like IRS and it's super safe, but then they would do it on Jobbers and it was like, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, no, DiBiase had like a bad neck at that point, so he wasn't going to be taking that shit. I don't think neither of them ever took the Frankensteiner, I don't think, as well.
I believe that. I haven't watched a good Steiner Money Inc. match in a hot minute.
Well, for me, maybe their best match on TV was this is turning into your podcast now, sorry. But this is like the countdown. This is like the Todd Pettengill countdown to, you know, if you like this, then buy the pay-per-view sort of thing. The cage match at the SummerSlam countdown show with Steiners and Money Inc. is a great match. And I would
The Steiners Money Inc. cage match, I haven't seen in a long, long time. And growing up, it was one of my favorite matches ever.
Mm. Yeah, I can appreciate it. I mean, I think a lot of people's favorite Steiners match in WWF was probably the Heavenly Bodies at SummerSlam. That is so good. Like, it's
so I growing up, that was my favorite, the Steiners Heavenly Bodies. And I rewatched it and it still holds up. It's still great. But then the head shrinkers one, man, the more times I watch it, the more I love it. I can't help it.
It is. Because the thing is that when Steiner takes that bump over the top rope, the first thing that happens to him is Afa breaks that kendo stick basically over his back. So
yes, I'm like, we didn't get to see him land, so we have no idea if he's dead or alive. And then Afa just whacks him with a stick and it's like, oh, I mean, I guess he's alive, ?
There can't have been a camera there for that, because they barely get Afa hitting Steiner with the stick as well. So
I know, it's a tragedy, man. I want to see how hard Scott, he had to have bounced. Dude, he had to have bounced off that mat. He had to have. He was going so fast.
Horrendous. It really... but if you ever get the chance, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but one of my other favorite Steiners matches in WWF was the TV rematch against the Quebecers in 94. It was a 10-minute time limit, and the Steiners had to win that match to then get a title shot against the Quebecers. And you can tell that the Steiners were basically on the outs at that point, because they just went the time limit draw. It was such a cold ending to an amazing 10-minute match. And it's one of those things where Scott does the Frankensteiner and Johnny Polo rings the bell and, you know, the match has to stop and start again and all that kind of thing. But it was such a weird thing. One of my earliest memories of it, because it was the featured match for that entire week on Superstars, so they showed it on Challenge as well. Even though you've seen the match, it would be shown again with a different commentary team who, for kayfabe purposes, have never seen that match before, which I always right. found like hilarious. Like those like Coliseum videos where Jim Ross would have to redo commentary for a match that he did on that Monday Night Raw. And, like sort of right. as I was watching it for the first time and the camera would accidentally get Bobby Heenan on camera, who wasn't doing commentary for the video. And, you know, they had to sort of work around it somehow, and just, you know, it was really awkward. But yeah, no, good stuff. I feel like we should get, this has been a lot of fun, because, like, we can just talk nonsense for a long period of time.
And we get to rambling, and then there's really no stopping us, because neither of us is going to make the call to stop rambling.
But the thing is, though, you're the big star, so I feel like I'm, like, you know, I should be the one to end it, sort of thing, you know. You're the one who...
You're good. I'm just, whenever this is done, I'm just cracking a beer and sitting on my couch, so...
Oh, well, should I, because it's been a little while, should I name drop some of the names that I've interviewed since last time I interviewed you?
Sure.
Okay, I've interviewed Sid.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. I didn't know we were talking Sid. That man's, I can't believe you even got him on the phone.
Well, there was a wrestling convention last year in Liverpool, and everyone was there. I mean, Undertaker, Flair, Bret, to the point...
Oh, he showed up, right?
Well, yeah, to the point where, like, Sid, Nash, Hall, etc. were kind of, like, second-tier names, because Undertaker was there, and, you know. And I was so excited about meeting Sid, so I got my thing signed, etc. I was working on the event as well, doing a retro game store where people could sit and play old WWF video games. Nice. So went up to Sid, and I love that sort of late 96, early 97 period in WWF, when the title picture kind of became more interesting, where it wasn't just two people, and you had Sid, Bret, Michaels, Austin, Undertaker, Mankind. And it was a smaller roster, but everyone was just really important to the roster. Sure. So I just, you know, chewed Sid's ear off about that. And I've got this Royal Rumble 92 poster that I'm trying to get signed by as many people as possible, and Sid autographed right over Ric Flair's name, which I found hilarious. Because the next person I got to sign it was Flair, and he was like, he didn't know what was going on, because he couldn't sign it over himself. So I just... Sid started talking, and then I never like to do this in person, but I was just, because I'm a nobody. I can't just, like, sort of be like, hey, want to do the podcast? You know, it's a bit of a mission sometimes to get guests. But Sid was just like, yeah, here's my number. As long as we can talk about the charity work that I'm doing, I'm like, yeah, no, absolutely fine. And then trying to arrange it from there was a little hard, because he was always going out, and he was like, oh, bring me back on Wednesday 9 p.m. my time, and I'm like, okay, that's 4 a.m. my time, but fine. And then you'll be like, oh yeah, sorry, I'm going out, and I'm just like, oh.
So Sid, I was supposed to do a show with Sid it was like 2 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And like the day of, he called the promoter and was like, yeah, I went to the airport and I tried to get on that flight, and Trump's got a travel ban going on. There's some kind of travel ban, so I can't fly. They told me I can't fly because of Trump travel ban.
Oh, yeah, no, that sounds about right. Well, wasn't it always about him going to his kid's softball game? That was always the reason. You know,
yeah, that's why I remember when people were like getting pictures with him at some convention in England. And I just remember thinking, wait, what? Sid left his house to go to England of all places? He wouldn't even leave his house to go to like Ohio.
Well, I wanted to make the joke that because of the softball thing, that I wasn't going to throw any softball questions, but I have a feeling he would have hung up like immediately.
Potentially true.
Yeah, but because I kind of made a list in my head. I'm like, right, I'm not going to ask about you. I didn't tell him this, but I wasn't going to ask about his leg. I wasn't going to ask about him shitting himself at WrestleMania 13. I wasn't going to ask about stabbing Arn Anderson with the scissors. And it was, you can imagine a fanboy like me just getting to chat to Sid for a little bit. That's kind of what it was like. Yeah. And it was hopefully a fun conversation, but I have Sid on Skype now, which is kind of like a weird, my Skype is just like a who's who of names now, who don't think to block me, but like, I don't just ring them up at like 4 a.m. and stuff like that. But,
if you could get a big like Zoom call together with like 10 random dudes who none of them have any idea like what they're doing, but they all pick up anyways. So you've just got like, there's just like all these dudes on your Zoom all video chatting with each other without knowing it.
That would be incredible, when especially when you think of some of the names. So Kevin Sullivan, I tried to interview Kevin Sullivan, but it turned into him interviewing me about British wrestling, so I was kind of okay with that. And Austin Idol, that was a crazy one. Who else? There's been a few. I would have to get the list at this point, but those are kind of the ones that certainly stand out. Over the past, you know, I've interviewed David Starr about 400 times now, but I haven't interviewed him since he's went really full on with the whole unionization of wrestlers, etc.
Yeah, he was just in an article for Esquire magazine, which is like that's a major publication about what's going on in the world right now and wrestling and Vince McMahon and all this stuff. So I haven't got a chance to read it yet, but I've been meaning to.
It's such, I mean, this podcast is essential listening. It's so, like, I don't know how to sort of, he's not doing himself any favors, but I don't think he cares that he's not doing himself any favors, because I think he's genuinely doing this for the good of the wrestlers,
which well, that's is been like, for years. Yeah, at this point, he's already probably gone too far to really double back and be like, oh no, let me protect myself here and any future jobs I may be looking at. I think he's already gone too far. Either you know, someone's gonna like that and take a chance on him and go for him, or not. And I don't think he cares either way.
No, and he's talented enough to be able to, I forget that he's like 7 or 8 years younger than me, which is just depressing. You know, we're like two ends of the physical spectrum at this point, for, you know, how we look. But the thing about David Starr, because he was working for that company in Germany, but they had ties with WWE, and apparently WWE said, don't yes with David Starr. I mean, shit. And that's, you know, you've ruffled feathers when that kind of thing happens. And I do feel bad for him, because it's just it one of those things that, like, Cornette opposed David Starr with this whole with the whole unionization thing, but now it's got to the point where, and this could be a whole other thing, but like, it feels like a lot of the wrestlers who got let go by WWE, if there was some kind of union, this wouldn't have happened. And Cornette is like agreeing with David Starr now. It really feels like the one common enemy is the virus, but also the common enemy is a lot of the billionaires who don't take care of their roster or their staff or anything else, because it's not just wrestling
for sure,
you know.
No, I read a really good article about WWE and how they're basically using this virus as an excuse to get rid of people, as opposed to like it's not a necessary act for them to be getting rid of people right now. It's not a necessary thing. It's a thing that they're almost using this pandemic to create an excuse so they could do that, to kind of, you know, make up for some mistakes of hiring some people. And to do it in a pandemic is kind of a gross, awful time to do something like that.
Especially when, like, in that same week, you boast that you've made more money in this year than any other year, and you've, like, paying all your shareholders dividends and stuff like that. Tom Buchanan told me, you know, the longtime photographer Tom Buchanan? He told me a story, because he has a share in WWE, and he gets a royalty check of, like, 12 cents, like, every so often. And he demands a physical certificate or check or whatever, instead of just however it's done, because he wants WWE to spend 50 cents on a stamp to send him a 12 cents check. but yeah, no, it's bad. I don't think there's any other way around it. And, you know, I feel bad for everyone who, and I think now, though, like, with social media and because of the genuine support that fans have towards independent wrestlers or anyone that they connected with in WWE and stuff like that, I think they'll be fine. I would like to think so.
I think it sucks for all these guys who just got released, because they're also getting released at a time when they can't go get more work. Also, if this thing goes, like, the really scary part is if this thing goes on for as long as we're talking about this thing going on, these people probably won't even be able to qualify for certain types of, like, assistance and unemployment. Once their 90 days are up, that's going to probably be it. And if this thing just keeps going and going and there's really no work anywhere, then, I fear for some of these people's,
It's dark, but I think at that point, it'll be interesting to see if finally some kind of action is taken or anything. Because, I mean, it's David Starr made the point that, and I think it's been made by others, that it's just really gross that the biggest company who can afford to keep people on staff is the only one that is actually letting go of people. Like,
agreed. And Ring of Honor went above and beyond, and they paid not only their workers who were on contract and salary, but also the non-salary, the per appearance workers, and like all staff for any show that they had canceled and had to be canceled due to this, which is something they definitely didn't have to do. Impact, I heard, did the same thing. Everyone got paid for all these shows that got canceled, went above and beyond to make sure that everyone, was taken care of in this. AEW hasn't laid anybody off. Everybody's still getting paid. And WWE, the biggest in the world, just, acts as a bunch of people when the world is going to shit. So,
and even, and I'm not saying that any of the other companies did this as a response to WWE, but it just...
No, they just did it because it was the right thing to do.
and the thing is as well, every wrestling company who has like a tape library or has merchandise is probably still making, because you don't have the costs of putting on shows at the moment, are still probably making a healthy amount of money, just through like network subscriptions or through merchandise sales and stuff like that. It's not like Vince is going to be living in a cardboard box anytime soon, or WWE is going to have, go from the Manhattan Center every week for Raw, although I would personally love that. So yeah, I don't know. We could go on at length about that, and I can imagine it's a pretty touchy subject at the moment. Yeah. Sorry. I feel like I'm all wound here.
No. You're fine. You're fine. I'm cool to talk about whatever. My phone is going to die in the next, soon.
I should let you go, but I did actually mention this emergency questions book, so I feel like everyone has been hanging on while we've been talking about this nonsense wrestling stuff.
I really sidebarred us with that Scott Steiner winning the world title talk.
Okay, right, let's find a question. Okay, what is the funniest thing that's ever happened to you at a funeral?
Oh, goodness. I don't have a personal story, but a friend of mine just told me a good one the other day, so I'll just regurgitate it.
Okay.
So a buddy of mine is actually like loosely related to Lou Gramm, the lead singer of Foreigner.
Yeah, not Crazy Luke Graham, the wrestler from the 70s.
No. Lou Graham,
okay,
the lead singer of Foreigner.
Yeah.
So they had like a similar, they're like second cousins or something. Well, somebody in their family died, and Lou Graham was a pallbearer, and so was this friend of mine. So they are, carrying the casket, and my buddy's cell phone goes off in his pocket, which he does not have on silent, and his ringtone at the time was Hot Blooded by Foreigner.
Oh, no. That is tremendous.
That is a funeral story.
Well, with that, I don't think we can... I think we've peaked at this point. Colin, everyone visit Colin's Pro Wrestling Tee Store. There will be a link below the show. Listen to his podcast as well. Again, there will be a link below the show. If you're a fan of tag team wrestling and you want to hear wrestlers, a tag team talk about tag team wrestling, what's not to like, basically. I'm personally waiting for the Toxic Turtles special.
We'll get there.
You'll get... and get there eventually, yes. So, yeah, is there any... I know that I've pimped everything, but is there anything you would like to say or leave us with wise words, like don't take drugs or whatever?
No. No, take all the drugs you want. We're in a pandemic, man. Do what you want. Live your life. Whatever you got going on, do it. I mean, you know, the usual. If you want to find me on Twitter, @extremelycute. If you want to find me on Instagram, @extremelycolin. I did just make a Twitter for the podcast, @dreamworkpod. The podcast is called Dreamwork. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts. You can find Dreamwork.
Is that as in Dreamwork makes the teamwork? Or?
Yeah, teamwork makes the dream work.
Or the other way around. Yes, there we are. Yeah, not Dreamworks as in the animation company.
No, you can imagine when I was trying to get a Twitter handle going, there was a lot of them already taken.
Well, with that, thank you very much, and this has been fun. This has really been fun, and we'll talk again soon. And thank you everyone for tuning in to this latest episode of Turn Chuckle. Yeah,
buddy.